All conditioned things arise and pass away. Knowing this deeply brings the greatest happiness, which is peace. Okay, well, I think I will go ahead and get started to make sure that we have plenty of time for our discussion group today, since we're going to break up into small groups. Oh, I did too. Thank you. I guess that's maybe watering or enjoying the peacefulness of the weather. Okay, so I will go ahead and get started. So our topic today is knowledge and vision of the way things are. And for those of you who are newer to our Sunday Sangha and to our Sim Sangha in general, this year we're exploring transcendental dependent arising. And that's the path that leads from suffering to liberation. So it's sort of the path out of liberation, out of dependent origination, cycling around and around and around in samsara and to liberation. So in February, we worked with faith, in March with joy or pramoja, in April with rapture or piti, in May with tranquility, with sukha or happiness, and this past month with concentration. And now we come to knowledge and vision of the way things are. And in a lot of ways, this knowledge and vision of the way things are is what we've been building up to all year. This is what we've been developing all this tranquility and contentment and concentration for, so that we can actually see clearly the truth of the way things are. And as we move along on this path, it would probably be a good time to say a few words about our relationship with it. And, you know, some of us might be very comfortable with the way that transcendent dependent origination unfolds. And we see this progression in our own practice, you know, maybe not all of it, but enough of it, so it feels like it makes sense. And for some of us, trying to put our practice into this framework is trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, and it's just not a very good fit. And still others of us might feel that we just really aren't sure. Maybe we don't have the length of practice experience to judge. So I'd just like to say, wherever you are with this, that's okay. You know, go with what's helpful for you. And as for what's not so helpful, just keep an open mind. If it's not helpful now, maybe at some time in the future, it will be helpful. So, you know, just see what these teachings are and don't worry too much or judge too much about whether how well they fit with your practice. And now for today's topic, knowledge and vision of the way things are. And this is a really important stage to reach in this unfolding, because this is where we see the truth and the wisdom that really can set us free from the pain of greed and hatred and delusion. So when we're in deep meditation and we have a concentrated and a steady mind, well, we know at that kind of conditions, the defilements or the hindrances don't bother us as much. They might be there, but they're more in the background. And maybe we've noticed that in our own practice this past month as we've been sitting and developing concentration. But as soon as that concentration is broken, and we start to go back into our normal activities, those hindrances can pop right up again. And it's the wisdom of seeing things as they are that really frees us in a more permanent way. The concentration can keep our mind focused in a certain way so temporarily they don't get through and bother us, but it's the wisdom that really frees us. And that's what we're beginning to talk about this month. So what does it mean to see the truth of the way things are, to have knowledge and vision of the way things are? Well, classically, this means having a direct experience of one or more of the three characteristics, dukkha or suffering, anicca or impermanence, and anatta or not self. And as is often the case with transcendental dependent arising, we need to talk about how this unfolds both in our formal meditation and retreat practice and in daily life, since the way these insights show up might be a bit different. So in terms of our formal practice, if we've been moving along, you know, through an extended period of practice as we would when we're on retreat and have been going through these various stages of transcendent dependent arising, you know, developing this contentment and tranquility and concentration, at some point we'll have a really deeply concentrated mind, a mind with the characteristics that the Thai master Ajahn Buddhadasa describes, and I mentioned this last week when I talked about concentration, a mind that's stable, pure, and active. And I should note that this mind isn't the mind of pure concentration that's totally absorbed in a single object, but a mind that's able to notice changing objects, a mind that can see all the four foundations of mindfulness. Or in other words, it's not the mind of jhana practice, but more the mind of vipassana practice. So if a person is doing like pure concentration jhana practice and is totally absorbed, they'd have to come out of that absorption and switch gears to move into this new phase. And for most of us, that isn't really going to be an issue since we don't really train so much in these pure concentration practices, and we'd be doing some form of vipassana or insight practice already. And in that case, you really don't need to do anything. You're already kind of noticing different objects. But when our mind is in this really steady, stable, pure, and active state, it can see really clearly. It sees things as they are, and it sees these three characteristics, dukkha, anicca, and anatta. And in this sort of big picture of seeing these, it's a really direct and deep experience of one or more of these truths and really seeing them on a very fundamental level. You know, it's not thinking about it, reflecting on it. It's actually directly experiencing it in a way that it's like when it happens, it's like, whoa. Now I see what the Buddha was talking about. Now I see what my teachers have been talking about. Whoa, this is really true. So it's a very direct and personal. And exactly how and when this kind of insight arises is one of the mysteries of the practice. It arises when conditions are right, and we can kind of help to encourage those conditions, but we can't really know or control when that will be. We can't make it happen. As one of our teachers, teacher Munindra said, in this we need to surrender to the law of karma. And when the fruit is ripe, it will fall from the tree, and we will see. And just what is seen and how it's seen is also a bit of a mystery, and it might vary depending on the way we've been practicing, depending on our own, particular inclination of mind. Now, especially if you've been practicing with the kind of momentary concentration where the attention is really steady on changing objects. If you've been practicing that way, as we get more and more settled, these objects are seen in more and more of a detailed and refined way, more and more of a subtle way. And some of the things that might arise could include this sort of dukkha of sensory and cognitive overload. And this is called the sankhara dukkha. And one part of it could be this sense of being like totally overwhelmed by so much sensory contact. All of this, sight, sound, sensations coming and coming and coming and coming, and it's just so much. The mind is so sensitive, it's trying to take in all of this. Or it might be just the overwhelm that's felt from the mind trying to process all of this stuff, going through the five aggregates, having contact, perception, attention, all the emotions coming up like anxiety, greed, irritation, all of this, doing this, doing this. That might be what is felt more. And these are things that we're undergoing all the time, but we don't always feel them in this overwhelming way or feel them as dukkha because the mind filters out a lot and kind of protects us so we can make our way through the world and do what we have to do. But when the mind gets really sensitive, it can see at this micro level and we feel it all and we're like, whoa, this is overwhelming. This is dukkha. And it's an experience that kind of helps us really turn towards wanting silence, peace, and cessation. And another thing that might happen is one might also have a really intense experience of impermanence, the sense that everything is arising and passing so quickly that the mind just can't really get a hold on anything. That as soon as you notice something, it's gone, and there's nothing to hold on to. Everything is in flux. That's another way that this might come up. Or one might also have an intense experience of anatta or not self. All of that structure that feels like me falling away. And in his essay on transcendent dependent arising, Bhikkhu Bodhi emphasizes this aspect of seeing knowledge and vision of things as they are, how when we see these five aggregates coming together and falling apart, coming together and falling apart, coming together and falling apart, there's this realization that this self that seems so permanent and so important is just part of this mental process where, there's contact with something and perception of it, and recognize what it is. There's a feeling tone to it. We kind of have all these mental formations about it. There's this consciousness of, oh, I'm knowing this thing. This just goes and goes and goes and goes. And there's no real self there except this sense of self that keeps forming and passing away. Whew. So that's a lot to experience. So when this happens, there might be this sort of feeling of, how we've developed all this calm and tranquility and concentration so we just can fall out of this into this vipassana chaos, which might be anything but calm and tranquil. And I remember one of my teachers, I think it might have been Stephen Smith, talking about his experience with this when he was practicing with the Burmese master Sayadaw Upandita. And he was going through all those beautiful mind states we've been talking about this year, and he'd go to his teacher and report how he was experiencing all this blissful rapture or deep calm and tranquility, and Upandita would be like, just kind of nod and, you know, good, good, but not seeming all that excited about it. But then one day everything shifted. All that calm disappeared, and it was as if everything was falling apart. Everything coming and going, nothing to hold on to. You know, kind of terrible and frightening, really. And, you know, when my teacher reported this to Sayana Upandita, he just kind of smiled. And then he says, okay, now we're really getting somewhere. So it's like this Vipassana chaos might not feel good, but actually when it happens, it's really good practice. So if you're practicing with the more spacious awareness, you know, more sort of wet resting in awareness or resting in silence, like we did in our meditation just now, these insights might have less of a chaotic quality. But one would still definitely perceive, you know, these objects coming and going, thoughts coming and going with no control over them. So a perception of anicca in this way, but maybe less with this chaos feeling and more with the quality of everything returning to silence or emptiness. And as the mind settles more and more into silence, there might also be this feeling of, where am I in all this? And this realization of anatta as the sense of self just kind of dissolves into this silence. So this might not be too as chaotic, but all that silence, maybe too much silence, can be quite disquieting as we start to feel our world and ourself slipping away. So when we have these more dramatic insights, there's often this feeling of overwhelm and sometimes of fear and resistance. And we may have the feeling that we're seeing more than we really want to see. And our sense of self and our security might feel threatened. And this is normal. This is okay. And in fact, this is an acknowledged stage of the process. And so it's a time to really be gentle with yourself, to give yourself plenty of time to integrate and feel safe with this new view of things. And it's a good time also to have the reassurance and guidance of a teacher. And luckily, these dramatic insights usually arise in the retreat environment where we have that kind of guidance and we have a teacher there to help us so we feel safer. And, you know, even if there's a lot of fear and resistance and this insight that we're having isn't fully integrated, it does change things. We know something we didn't know before. Our view isn't quite the same. And sometimes we might be in the middle of confusion, but we still see this change in subtle ways. We might feel a little less surprised and upset when our plans don't turn out as expected. We might be a little less attached to our ideal of what we should be or who we should be. Maybe a little more interested in what's occurring now and a little less interested in what was or what might be in the future. But of course, the clear seeing and knowledge and vision of the way things are doesn't only occur during this kind of big experience type of insight that we can have in meditation. For some of us, the truth of impermanent might come home when we go through a big and unexpected change in our lives, like losing a loved one suddenly, maybe living through a natural disaster, being diagnosed with an illness, or maybe going through an unexpected change in our financial situation. And when something like that happens, we realize that our world really can change very suddenly in ways we can't control. And so that's a very big and often painful and scary way to see impermanence. And then there are all those less earth-shaking but really significant insights that occur both on and off the cushion, where we're also recognizing some aspect of one or more of the three characteristics and cutting through our delusions. For example, there's a situation where you're sitting there, you know, trying so hard to concentrate or trying so hard to make rapture appear or make tranquility appear or whatever you think ought to be happening appear. When you start to notice all this tension in your mind and body and you begin to realize that what you're doing is painful and you think, wait a minute. I thought this was wise effort and aspiration, but really? This is just craving. This is just craving, wanting something new and aversion to what's happening. And you realize, oh, this is dukkha. This is dukkha. Or the time when you're sitting there finally having some really delightful body sensation of rapture and you find yourself not actually enjoying it, but starting to worry about how long is this going to last? What can I do to keep it? How can I make it even better? And you see how this wanting, because it really is just wanting, is preventing you from appreciating the wonderful experience you are having. So again, you know, noticing, oh, dukkha. Or it might be when you've gone all your life thinking, I'm an angry person, or I'm a timid person, or whatever it is, whatever you use to define yourself. And then you know, start to notice all those moments when you aren't angry and when you aren't timid, and you see, oh, that's just a feeling that comes up sometimes. I'm not always that way. This feeling really isn't permanent. And then you notice, oh, this really isn't who I am. And you begin to sense this impermanent quality of your thoughts and emotions, their impersonal quality. Or you may begin to notice how all thoughts arise on their own, whether you like it or not. And you begin to see, wait a minute, maybe I'm not these thoughts. What am I really? Where am I really? Or maybe it's that situation where you think everything is going smoothly and then your car breaks down. Or one of your pipes develops a leak. I went through that just recently. Oops. Or your computer dies and you think, no, 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 this shouldn't be happening. And then you realize, wait a minute, everything changes. Everything breaks down. No, I don't like this. But it's not so shocking that it might be happening. And there isn't any reason that it shouldn't be happening to me. Or as Candace mentioned when we had our teacher's discussion about this topic, that time when you're reading a book or maybe listening to a Dharma talk and you hear or read about some Buddhist idea that you've heard about and read about before, and then suddenly something clicks and you understand it and you think, now I see what this is about. And you all will have your own examples of this. Lots of examples of the small, but not really so small ways in which the truths of suffering and impermanence and not self make themselves known. the small ways in which we recognize our delusion and confusion and see that what we assume to be true just isn't so. And as I think about the dramatic insights and the more everyday insights, I'm reminded of a quote from Ajahn Chah that Philip Moffat included in his book on the Four Noble Truths, Dancing with Life. And while recognizing the value of those big experiences we can have in meditation, Ajahn Chah said that instead of going out and looking for dramatic experiences or trying to make them arise, since we really can't do that anyway, he said, we focus on here and now Dharma. This is where we can let go of things and resolve our difficulties. We look at the present and see continuous arising and ceasing. And when he says this about here and now Dharma, we should remember too that this here and now Dharma is here and now, whether we're going about our daily lives or we're sitting on the cushion in retreat. And then he goes on to say, when the mind starts to realize that all things, without exception, are by their very nature uncertain, the problems of grasping and attachment start to decrease and wither away. I keep saying this, but people do not take it to heart. And this realization that all things without exception are by their very nature uncertain is something we understand not only from those very big moments on retreat, but from those daily life moments when we're all upset about something and then we realize, oh yes, change is a fact of life. Dukkha is a fact of life. And these realizations are what we're going to be practicing with this month. So as we connect with this path, I'd really encourage you to keep an open mind about how and where insight might arise for you. Because, you know, we really don't know how our practice will unfold. We really don't. So avoid making judgments about the relative importance of retreat practice and daily practice and how it should be for you. You know, when we get the idea that it's only what happens on retreat that matters, only those dramatic insights, then we dismiss, you know, 90% of our opportunity to practice and develop wisdom. Plus, that attitude keeps us always on the lookout for the next big thing, which is really unhelpful. We're way away from here and now Dharma, and it makes it harder to integrate what we've seen on retreat into daily life. On the other hand, if we tell ourselves that these retreat experiences are kind of too woo-woo or something like that and they don't really last, and our daily life experiences are all that really count, then we're not recognizing the power of insight in the classical sense to really change our minds and cut through our delusions and set our practice in the direction of true liberation. So it's all important. The retreat moments that feel dramatic, the everyday moments that might seem small but really aren't so small. And both kinds of insights are available to us all. So thank you so much for listening. Oh, somebody got cut out and we'll let him back. So before we do our small group discussion, I'd like to make a few announcements because I know sometimes people need to leave and aren't able to stay. So I'll try to be quick with this so we have plenty of time for both small group and big group discussion. So first, our Children's Mindfulness Center will be continuing. It will be today, August 2nd, the first Sunday of the month, at our center in the University District from 2 to 3 p.m. So it's a nice way for younger children to have some stories, games, snacks, and be introduced to the Dharma. And then we have a couple of interesting events in September. First, on Tuesdays from September 1st to September 22nd, Sean Holmes will be leading a class on Living With, Not Against, Mindfulness for Persistent Conditions. And this class will use the teachings on the four foundations of mindfulness to help the people who participate come into a wise relationship with a whole variety of conditions like chronic pain, illness, disability, neurodivergence, and aging. So this could be really interesting. And the classes will be in person at our center from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And you can indicate that you want to join on the SIMS website with RSVP, and you'll get the information you need. And then on Saturday, September 12th, Suze, Lauren, Judith, Steve Wilhelm, and I will be doing a day-long on the seven factors of awakening. And it will be both in person at our center and online. And you can sign up for that on the website with RSVP. And we hope that a lot of you will be able to attend, since it'll be a nice way to explore some of the mind states we've been talking about and working with all year in more of a meditative session where we'll have a chance to sit with them for a full day. And also, as always, your offerings of Dana are very much appreciated, whether they're financial or donations of time through volunteering. And the details of how to offer Dana are available on the website. So, with that, I think I would like to go ahead and allow you to have a little bit of time for small group discussion. And I'll give you about 15 minutes or so to talk with each other. And during this time, I'd encourage you to just share whatever is coming up with you as we start with this topic of knowledge and vision of the way things are. What are you thinking about? Looking forward to? Confused about? How is it sitting with you? Because we've only just started. And remembering our guidelines, let everyone have a chance to speak without interruption, listening with your full attention as much as you are able, maintaining confidentiality within the group, and avoid giving unsolicited advice and speaking with kindness. So I will put you into your groups. If anybody needs to leave this morning because they have other things coming up, this is a good time to do that. And then I will go ahead and form the groups. Let me see. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's always kind of fun when all of these faces come. Boop! Coming back. So we have some time now to share your experience. If you'd like to share some of your small group discussion, or if you have any comments or questions, we have a little bit of time to do that now. So you can let me know that you have something to say by raising your virtual hand, or you can also, wave your hand like this if you have trouble finding your virtual hand. Oh, so we got several people. I think Candace was first in line. So Candace, go ahead.
You know, I was, I loved your talk.
Oh, thank you.
And we had a great discussion in our little group. And what came up for me is resisting seeing how I am reacting to things as they are, and realizing things about me that are kind of tough to face. But then realizing, and it's tough to be equanimous about it. But if I am with a person in crisis, or a person who's just gotten a difficult diagnosis or something, I realize that when I'm in crisis and somebody is very equanimous, it feels so safe to be with them. It feels like this refuge. And so it dawned on me to just kind of see if I can be a refuge to others and myself. I mean, just kind of when it's a little too much to face, if I can just think of that it might be a way in. Anyway.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And I think the more wisdom we have, the more possible it is to be that kind of a refuge. So thank you. Let's see, Thomas?
Yeah, thanks a lot for your talk, Linda. I've really been looking forward to this topic. It's a big one, I think.
It's a big one.
I feel it's something where I use the term the fog is sort of lifting for me gradually. I think there is more under the fog out the step that I look forward to learning about. But one of the things that I'm feeling is that it's knowledge of and vision of how things are it has a very freeing feeling, because I sort of wrapped up in many stories about myself, whether I'm sufficient or not sufficient, or great or not so great, or whether people really like me or not like me, lots of that kind of stuff. And before coming to this practice, I really believed a lot in that. And sometimes great, sometimes hurtful. And I feel that my experiences are really not that unique as I start looking deeper into them over the years. And we had a great conversation in our group around extroversion and introversion. And what I realized was that my partners, Judith and Faith here, have the exactly same discussion about whether they're introverted or extroverted than I have. And so it's really not about me very much. I mean, this is a shared experience. This is a shared exploration that we had. We have, I think, just a great conversation. And that I think that conversation is a very example of the freeing component of knowledge of vision of how things are. So yeah, that's what came up for me.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's so true. I mean, it is really freeing. I mean, sometimes our first little foray into it is frightening. But yeah, especially kind of getting a sense of not self is really freeing, because it does free us from all these preconceptions about what we are, who we should be. There's just so much freedom. So thank you for sharing that, Thomas. Judith?
Hi, thank you, Linda. That was a really good launch for this topic. Lots of food for thought there. I really enjoyed it. And I was thinking about, and you kind of mentioned this too, the place that this has in this sequence of transcendental dependent arising. And because I always before thought, well, you know, concentration, samadhi, and seeing things clearly, that's it, right? That's the top of the peak. That's what we're going for. And then it's kind of daunting in a way to realize, no, there's more. Yeah. We're only barely over halfway through. So yeah, anyway, that was interesting. And I agree with Thomas. It was really, really good discussion that the three of us had. And yeah, that's Sangha, right? You mm-hmm. say, oh yes. Yeah, no, I'm not the only one experiencing this.
Yeah. And that's what you say is really true. We're not to the end yet. There's
not
more
yet
to go. So we, you know, we have this experience of seeing clearly, and then there's all that follows from that seeing.
Right.
It's what we still have to discuss.
Yeah.
And I think, and the, even the seeing clearly is a process. It's not like one and done. Maybe for a few people. Maybe
right.
For a few people, but I think for most of us, not so.
No.
Suze?
I wanted to share what I shared in my group, that I avoided, in what I thought were pretty creative ways, dukkha for years. I denied it, I jumped over it, I did whatever. And when my practice changed, and I really spent time with dukkha, and I started to investigate what's it all about, those little insights that you were describing kept coming, and they were easier to find. And while they felt, you know, real little, they were pretty significant, because once I allowed myself to really stay with the dukkha and ask, well, what's really going on here? And I could see how the mind took a little problem and made it into this dramatic story about me and all that. It really started building, and it's easier now, you know, when to stay with it and to understand it. And so the focusing back on the three characteristics, it was so helpful. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. And what you're saying is really a good illustration of how those small insights really add up to a much deeper understanding. And that's an important thing for all of us to remember too. I mean, the big stuff is important, but it's also the accumulation of all these smaller insights that is really important as well. Faith? Oh, you're muted. Faith, you're muted.
I do. I'm muted, but I keep on thinking my hands are going to do the whole thing for me.
No! But,
Linda, I want to thank you, because I have heard, I think you talk three times about this subject, and gradually the fog has lifted.
Oh, good.
Today, I think, at least for this moment, I got what you were explaining to us and conversing, and it just meant a lot to me, so I want to thank you.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad that it things kind of came clear for you, and you're kind of talking about understanding more about how seeing those three characteristics really opens things up. Yeah. Let's see, Liz.
Hello. I shared this in my group, but for me, what really hit me was that, like, our sense of self may feel threatened, and that's okay. I dug on that, because I feel as I deepen in my practice, like, identities that I used to have and ways I used to process difficulties have melted away. And then that has changed the way I look at myself and my identity. And sometimes I'm like, it kind of freaks me out, because it's not my old story. And that's kind of a blessing and a curse, you know, like whatever. But I really appreciated the whole idea. That's okay. Because it's a path, and like Thomas said, I'm super jazzed on this step. I'm excited for this moment.
Yeah, thank you. This is a really exciting step, I think, and I agree that place of fear and uneasiness, it's like it's so natural and so normal to experience some of that, because our whole habitual worldview is kind of being turned upside down. And I love the way you talked about experiencing that, and yet also experiencing that freedom that it brings in the midst of feeling a bit of threatening. And that's the way it's been for me too. You know, it's this mixture, and gradually I'm more comfortable with the uncertainty and the formlessness But there's still points where the mind will get a little bit too close and then it's like, not going there, not going there. It's a really interesting process. Thank you. Let's see. Oh, and I guess this, maybe I don't see any more hands, so I think this is probably a wonderful time to close our time together. So before we leave, I'd like to spend a few minutes sharing the merit of our practice, and particularly bringing to mind one of our Sangha members, Alima, who recently had a bad fall with a concussion and some broken ribs. And she's recovering now, but I think would really appreciate our metta and compassion so we can share the merit of our practice with her. May she recover and be at ease during that process. And then extending that sharing to others we know who maybe are experiencing difficulty. And outward to encompass all beings. May all beings feel safe and protected, happy and peaceful, and may they all live with ease. So have a great day today, and we'll have an interesting month, I think. This is just getting us started. Just getting us started. So thanks so much for being here, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.